Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Well, this week, as luck would have it, it is the 23rd of July, 2019, the 95th episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Brady Wright.
95, wow.
95. Brady Wright, Shane Osborne, Steve, the producer, Johan, ready to power slide another Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust your way. How do you power slide a show?
I don't know.
Let's find that out.
Yes.
We still have a couple of room,
I was thinking
spots.
Power glide our way through.
But then you're driving a 63 Chevy Impala. Although, I don't know. Lots of cars have a power glide.
Yeah, 69.
57?
El Camino.
Yeah. So we do have a couple more sponsor spots open. We'll be talking about that later in the show. Also, we have part two of our conversation with Jim Ritter from the Seattle Police Metro Museum, or Seattle Metro Police Museum, or one of those things, which he will correct me on when he gets here. In the meantime, Steve has collected a plethora of cool stuff about cars that we've never heard before in our entire lives. What in the heck have you got this week?
Well, we've got some bad news for Ford.
No, again?
Ford is facing a $1.2 billion lawsuit over the F-150 mileage testing problem. The lawsuit states that the posted numbers are based on smoke and mirrors.
Is that the technical term?
Yes.
So Ford's lying about their
mileage. Yes, and we thought it was just the VW.
Yeah, apparently not.
Already facing a number of lawsuits related to faulty transmissions, Ford has been hit with another class action, this one alleging the automaker falsified fuel economy numbers for its number one pickup truck.
But how? So I got to ask this. I just have to ask.
Yeah.
Ford sells more F-150s than I think any other pickup truck manufacturer.
Yeah.
They have a pretty good product. Why? And nobody buys those things for the mileage. It's I don't care.
You got to ask yourself, why would they bother?
What's the point? What are they gaining out of that?
Because maybe a bean counter decided that they could save a... I don't know.
Well, I know there's some I don't want to say EPA, but environmental credits that you get for having a decent
mileage. But not on an F-150.
Well, yeah. Is it worth this huge... What's the lawsuit? What's the total for that?
Well, it's $1.2
billion. $1.2 billion. Boy, I hope those mileage figures were worth it.
Well, yeah, that's what I say. But speaking of 150s, F-150, well, Ford knows that it's such a popular that they're actually coming out with an all-electric.
Oh, sure.
And it's still several years away, but the automaker wants to let everybody know it will be one tough truck showcasing this by actually having its prototype pull a train load of trucks weighing over 1 million pounds.
Of course they are.
So, yeah, so they got that a bunch of it's pulling it right in front of a rail car. So.
You know, that's not as difficult as it seems.
Because it's on a rolling...
Once you get it rolling, it's not that
Now, put it on a sled, like the tractor pulls.
Yeah.
Now, that's a different thing.
Sure. Let's see how that works for you. You know, speaking of pre-release promotion...
Yes.
Volkswagen just recently killed the bug again. They said, okay,
we're
done with the bug. Yep. I hereby go on record predicting that in a relatively short amount of time, I'm going to say 5 years, but I may be off by a little bit, but it's not going to be in the foreseeable future. They will re-release the bug for a third time, and this time it will be electric.
I think it would make a perfect vehicle.
They're doing it with
pack.
The van.
Yes.
I know they're going to do it with the bug.
Yep, yep. And they're going to do the real retrofied van, too.
Yeah. The bug will never die.
No.
It'll just... be reborn in a couple of different configurations.
And speaking of not dying...
Solar-powered.
We have been talking about this for months. Well, the new Corvette is out.
Oh, yeah.
And soon to be at a local dealership.
60K.
I think... This is one of the ideas of our YouTube channel. Once we launch the YouTube channel, we're going to have a lot of different things other than just the live show. And I'm thinking we've got to have a feature where Brady... is out driving the new cars.
I'm happy to do that. I will test drive anything.
That's right.
You know, the cool thing
Brady's
about the
test
Corvette,
drive.
Sure. The cool thing about the Corvette is, finally, and they've been talking about it for a decade, put a mid-engine, in this car. I mean, the Ferrari did it, but it cost, $600,000. Corvettes managed to do it with a pretty good looking design. They have more luggage space than the Ferrari. It's about 60K, which is less than a Hellcat. It's got 680 horsepower, something like that.
Wow.
It's a great package.
And
why
it handles incredibly well.
Online, people are slamming it because well, it's not sticking with the original Corvette. It's not the kind of, you know, it's like, dude, do you not understand where automotive engineering
right.
is going? It's a perfect design. Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking that out. And we're definitely going to get it set up with a camera in the
can
car.
Can I say more nice things so that they'll let me test drive one?
Yes, yes.
Where's Chuck Olson? Chuck, if you're listening, I'm happy to drive the Corvette. Just bring it on up here.
Well,
hey, you know who we ought to get back?
Yes, the guys.
We need Robert Durf up here. He's got one. He's trading in his, I think he's trading in his existing Corvette. It's 2017. I think he's trading it in on a mid-engine.
No kidding.
Well, I'm going to talk to him. And
as soon
does,
as he gets, and you know what? We're going to do an, I've got everything set up. We'll
I'm
do
bringing
a
him
in
up.
Show. We'll do a in-car tour first.
Yeah.
Here you are.
That'd be good.
Big congratulations to the first woman ever to head a major auto retailer.
Yes.
AutoNation, probably one of the largest dealerships conglomerations in the United States, named Cheryl Miller, the company's CFO, to take the reins as chief executive officer. The auto retailer's second person to hold the job in 4 months since the longstanding CEO and chairman Mike Jackson gave up the job. And she comes in with 20 years of experience in the automobile sector and has been the CFO since 2014 and started in 2009. So we wish her nothing but the best, and we hope it's a good mix for her and a good fit.
Yeah, go for it.
And I'd love to get those guys on board. That we could really do
call
a lot.
Them.
I am.
Why wouldn't they take our calls?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And speaking of which, Jaguar has confirmed plans to add an all-new model at the top of its SUV lineup, sharing its underpinnings with several upcoming Land Rover models. The British automaker also has confirmed it is looking into possibility of adding several small baby Jags. And I'm thinking they're looking at what, well, face it, that's what Mercedes-Benz has done.
I know.
To get into the lower end.
At least Mercedes made their own cars. I'm really nervous about Jaguar because they have a history of buying a platform.
Yes.
You know, and I'm just...
Is that an Isuzu engine? Oh,
well yeah, see, you don't want to put a Jaguar logo on that thing because people will know. I mean, they're going to know anyway, but it's just, I hope they don't do that. I hope they spend the R&D money.
You're right.
And bring out a Jaguar, if it's a small one, if it's an economical one, fine,
yeah.
But make it a Jag.
Because its namesake, you don't want to mess it up with a Mazda or something like that.
Just don't use Lucas Electrics. That's all I'm
exactly,
asking.
Exactly.
That's all I want.
I'm with you. Now, speaking of recalls, because we haven't done that for a while, Volvo, the safe car company, is recalling 507.
What?
507 with a little 507,000 vehicles around the world due to a potential fire risk. The recalled vehicles have faulty engine component and affect a series of models from the company. So, my gosh, 500,000 vehicles? We're talking
that's
Polaris world here.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, it's not.
Is it? So it's electrical.
Yes. They said it's potential fire risk is what the real issue is.
What does it have a model list?
No.
No?
It's a faulty engine component, affect a series of models from a series of them.
Oh,
so
okay.
If you own a Volvo, check out with your local dealer.
You're
going to get a notice.
They'll send you a letter.
500,000.
Well, that's a lot of Volvos.
What's a lot of Volvos?
Do you know what Volvo's sales numbers are in the U.S.?
No, I do not.
Because that would, I mean, you know, 500,000 cars is
worldwide, they're pretty big.
Well, yeah, but I mean, these are all U.S. cars, I would assume. The ones that we're talking
about. No, it's worldwide.
Oh, 500,000 worldwide? Yeah. Well, I hate to say this, but that's actually not a huge number for worldwide sales. It's a big number.
Dude, can you imagine it 500,000? Let's just say 500,000. The fix is, let's say, $300 a pop.
Oh, of course. No, there's no doubt it's going to be expensive. I'm just saying in the grand scheme of things, how many cars do they sell? What percentage
does
that represent? We should find out.
We should. I need to do more work on that.
Get on
Stay
that.
Stay tuned. We'll find out. We'll get back to you next week on that. Bad news for some Ford employees. Of course, they're downsized another 200 in their Ontario plant.
Yeah.
And it's just one more of the many due to slowdown in sales.
However, I will say good news about Ford. They canceled plans to build a plant in Mexico, and they are instead going to build that same plant and expand one that they have in Texas. So glad to have you with us. Coming up, we're going to bring you our second half of the chat with Jim Ritter from the Seattle Metro Police Museum and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. We actually have two trivia questions this week, so stick with us. This is Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Okay, forest animals. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear.
Welcome back to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, and we are at the Windshield View. And this week, we are back talking with Jim Ritter from the Seattle Metro Police Museum. Our first hour was just not enough, and so we thought we would welcome back Jim to the studio, and he has kindly joined us. So, Jim, it's good to have you here again.
Hey, great to be here again. Thank you.
I know that last time we were here, we talked a lot about the history of police vehicles and stuff in Seattle and King County and in Western Washington. And one of the things that I remember from the last show was you talking about the first police car that you actually sort of came upon. It was one of the original ones that was all in one piece. You guys found it and brought it back and got it restored. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was our 67 Plymouth Fury 1 from the King County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah.
Yes.
We located that in Nebraska, of all places.
That's it. And I the thing that I don't think I got a chance to ask the last show, but I was curious about. So 67, now I was a mere lad in 67, but I remember seeing the cop cars, and at the time, they seemed like they were really, really big to me. I mean, full-size car.
They were huge.
Now, today, I know the police use a full-size vehicle, but they're also using the SUVs and stuff like that. So of the two, and not talking about the SUVs, the Fords and stuff, but just the sedans, which cars have the most room in them? Because I know you got a lot more stuff, you know.
Yeah, I think that it appears to most people that the vintage cars of the old days in the 60s and 70s and especially the 50s had an enormous amount of room.
Right.
Both in the passenger compartments and in the trunk. We had less equipment back then. We had a radio head and that was it. The cars of the 60s mostly had motor-driven sirens which are under the hood.
Right.
They're activated by a toggle switch. And other than that, you might have had a shotgun in there, and that was it. Well, you compare that now.
The trunks are full.
Trunks that are full with electronics, camera equipment, other supplies. The driver's compartment has got the computer screens, the camera screens.
Yeah, there's practically no room in the passenger seat.
Well, there's almost
none.
There
is, but
and so that appears to make the cars of today look smaller than the cars of yesteryear.
Now, the other thing, when you're talking about that, back in the day, horsepower was all the bells and whistles because you needed to go fast and you needed to catch the bad guys.
Well, those cars were heavier, too.
They're very heavy.
And they're very heavy.
Yeah.
But now, with all the radio and all the other ways of tracking people, speed isn't necessarily the most important aspect of policing in cars. Am I correct on that?
Well, I think when you're talking about the metropolitan areas, that's
right.
Absolutely correct. I think when you've got your environment is out in the county or on the state highways, that's a little different story. And
yeah.
The deputies and the troopers have to be able to catch up with the violators. And they've got the open space to do that and keep the public safe at the same time.
Right.
That's and every once in a while you see a video on YouTube or someplace where, you know, the police are chasing some guy and he's, you know, breaking speed records and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you know, you've got air support and you've got people, you know, at a distance following these guys, although there is one video out there of some guy in a Hellcat outrunning the police helicopter, but that's one in a million. My dad always used to say, with, you know, tongue in cheek, don't be stupid because you can't outrun the radio.
Yeah, I heard that a lot.
You can't. I mean, eventually they're going to find, you know, where you are, as long as there's some visual support. But out on the road, the troopers, like you say, and the guys in the rural areas, horsepower becomes, you know, a configuration. What's the trade-off between that and strategy and tactics?
Well, I think when you look, even back when I first got hired in 1980, there wasn't a whole lot of strategy or tactics. If we had a violator, you know, back then traffic violations were criminal. You could arrest for those, and we would chase them. We would chase anybody that didn't stop for us, and sometimes those chases would last 5 minutes. Sometimes they'd last for hours.
Yes.
I remember a chase that took place when I was a deputy sheriff in Ellensburg that went all the way to the Oregon border.
Wow. That's
but again, when you're talking about central Washington at 1 o'clock in the morning in 1980,
nobody there.
There were hardly any citizens driving around that
time
of night, and very few cops.
Yep.
So there was very little to stop these folks that wanted to get away from us.
And, you know, at that time, you're like, hey, it'll eat my my time card up.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was equally as dangerous as it is now.
It would be.
When you look at the traffic now compared to what it was back then, it's night and day.
Well, and now let's step back. You said it was a 67 what was the?
67 Plymouth Fury 1.
Okay, now did they also, it seems to me that the 67, 68 Polaris was another, Dodge Polaris was another vehicle.
You mean
that
the Polara, the Dodge
Polara? Polara, thank you, yes.
Yeah, the real popular Dodge Polaras were in the early 70s, 70,
oh,
71,
okay.
72,
oh,
73.
Okay.
They were enormous cars, very heavy. Very fast. The State Patrol in Washington used them. The Police Museum actually has two originals.
Okay.
We have a 72 and a 73.
They had the 440 six-pack in them?
Yep, 440s, yep. And nothing could beat them.
That's right.
And if they had been lighter, they would have been even faster.
Yeah.
Now, that was also a time when you could still order, as a civilian, you could buy a car off the menu and get an awful lot of the so-called cop equipment. A friend of mine in 68 bought a Coronet 440, but he got a four-door, and then he had the I think at the time,
yeah,
it was
Coronet was another one, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, he put the 426 Hemi in it that was supposedly the law enforcement version, and he had the bigger wheels, the bigger tires, he had the cop suspension, and, you know, it was a big deal. He was building a street racer. I mean, you know, that's what he wanted. But you could still order that stuff off the menu. Now, after a while, didn't they stop offering that stuff to the civilians?
They did. You know, by the 70s, for the most part, it was police only, especially during the gas crisis in the 70s. Civilians could not get big block cars anymore, just police only. That, for police, even lasted until 1978, which was the last year for the 440s. And then it went to 360s and then went down to 318s by 1981.
Right.
There was a big downsizing in the police power packages in their cars.
Well, that was also the time when they started figuring out that a mid-sized engine with proper carburation and gears could actually outperform some of the big blocks, rev faster and stuff like that, too.
Well, they could certainly outmaneuver them.
Yeah.
Outmaneuver.
I remember when the Dodge Darts first came around in the police world in this area in 1976. The 76 Dodge Dart had a 364 barrel in it, which for a light car, might have weighed half what a Polara did.
That's right.
Could get up and go pretty quickly, and
from
the start could actually outdo the big block behemoths of the era.
Yeah.
But you take that big behemoth and you put it out on the freeway when you're a state trooper, and that thing just, you're gliding down at 100 plus miles an hour, and you're not even thinking twice. You're just all day long.
The only thing you're thinking is you're praying there's not a deer going to jump.
That's exactly right, because you can't.
Yep.
Yeah. You can't
move. It doesn't really matter what you're driving. If one of those 120 pounds of stop is not so good. I want to ask you about some of the equipment and things that that have kind of developed over the years. One of the things that people talk about now is the run flat tires. It's a big deal, and I was just curious, at what point did those tires start to become standard equipment?
Well, they're really not standard equipment for a lot of police agencies. They're very expensive.
Yes,
Most agencies can't afford those. They may be in the modern SUVs. I'm not sure what they're offering now when it comes to that. But again, they're very,
Range Rover's got one.
Very well, yeah. Range Rovers are a lot more expensive than what we're driving.
I'm personally not spending six figures for a car, but
yeah. So you know, a lot of those specialty items are something that most law enforcement agencies have a tough time penciling out with their budgets.
Yeah, I'm told they ride kind of hard.
Well, they do.
I was going to just mention, I was going to bring that up later on the show, but you've already broached the subject. The tire experts out there say they run really bad because it's the air that you're riding on that give you that, that comfort.
Sure.
And they don't handle very well.
They don't. As a matter of fact, when I compare that to our armored vehicles we have at the SPD, they have those run flat tires.
Yeah.
And they're basically, you know, very heavy. It damages the steering and wears it out.
Oh, I can imagine.
And, you know, you feel every bump. There are no shock absorbers strong enough
sure.
to be absorbing that kind
of... But, of course, an APC is not a chase vehicle either. I mean,
no.
you're not going to...
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, those tires would add more weight to the car, and it would reduce the handling.
Yep.
And so there's not a whole lot of advantage to many police agencies getting those tires.
So when Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, we're going to get right up to our break here, and I don't want to...
I have a question for after the break, then.
Sure. Yes.
Tell me about when the Crown Vicks started to become popular.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back with more of the show and the windshield view for you guys and gals, and stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More horsepower, chrome, and rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend.
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
And we're back with the second half of the windshield view. Just before the break, I was asking our guest Jim Ritter from the Seattle Metro Police Museum about the Crown Vic. The Ford Crown Victoria is kind of a iconic police vehicle. Lots and lots of them and all of the cop shows and everything else. But specifically for the Northwest, I was just going to ask, at what point did those things sort of become the standard?
Well, they became the standard in the mid-90s when Chrysler stopped making police cars by 1989.
There you go.
Chevy took over in 1990. With the Caprice and Impalas, right. And there were different you know, between Ford and Chevy trying to take over the market share of police package vehicles. Well, you started seeing the Ford LTD, the Crown Vic, which morphed into the Crown Victoria, which pretty much, you know, Ford had it figured out after a few years of what the cops wanted. They did a lot of research on what was comfortable for us to drive, what was efficient fuel-wise, what was roomy enough. You know, those Crown Vics lasted until 2011. They were the longest-serving police package vehicle in history.
And you still see a lot of them on the road, you know, aftermarket, I mean, bought from the departments and stuff.
You do. There are still some agencies that are still using
Crown Vics. I've seen a couple of them,
yeah. It seems like they last forever.
What Seattle and the State Patrol did is they recognized, because Ford warned everybody, that 2011 was the last year for them. So what a lot of agencies did is they pre-bought hundreds of these vehicles.
Oh, wow.
Because there was really nothing to replace them. It had been vetted. The last thing you want to do as a fleet buyer in a police department is, you know, buy a car that has not been vetted,
right. Because
you can have all kinds of recall problems, which means your entire fleet is down. So you want to be really careful. So they wanted to use those Crown Vics over the next 4 years or longer, since we have some that are still from the 2000s.
Yep.
So as we could identify new manufacturers or of police vehicles that had been vetted, all the bugs had been worked out of them. And so by 2011, you know, the Ford SUVs were the preferred model that most agencies have adopted. They have their drawbacks as well, but, you know, they're pretty much the only thing out there right now.
And I notice a lot of the security companies, the rent-a-cops and stuff that do the malls and whatever, they love those. They buy the used Crown Vics, and they put their, strip them down, put their markings on there, and they're running around because they can have all their stuff in there. And they can get a lot of mileage out of those things,
too.
They
can, and I think that unlike when I was a kid, my first car was a 76 Coronet from Bellevue Police Department.
Right.
We bought it because of the big engines. It looked cool.
Yep.
Well, now these folks buy these old police cars not so much for the performance, but for the fact that they're maintained so well.
Yes.
They've got guaranteed
service
records that are maintained on a regular basis, which cars that you get outside of government service aren't, and it's kind of a crapshoot sometimes.
Yep.
So when did I know there are some agencies locally, and I'm sure other places as well, that are using the Dodge, Chargers?
Yeah, the Chargers.
Chargers.
And Seattle has got some of them in our traffic division. At some point in time, Seattle had looked at replacing the fleet with these, which our fleet managers discouraged strongly.
Did they? Because they're a big, tubby vehicle that supposedly handle okay, but
probably interior-wise, they're not as big as you think.
They're not as big.
Yeah. That's right.
They're very low.
Yes.
Obviously, we have to think about things like getting in and out of the cars as much as we do. That's why cops have a lot of back problems. plus, you know, the Chargers were very fast cars, faster than most of the new officers who are 21 and used to driving imports would get in these things and get into accidents.
Yes.
Sure.
Which costs the city a lot of money.
Wow.
It increases the liability. So it was discouraged from anybody but some of the traffic officers to have them. And
our local Linwood's had a few of them here.
Sure.
Yeah. Yep. Actually, I have a friend who's in private security now, but he started out as a law enforcement agent at a small town out north. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, he left that department because of an incident where he borrowed his sergeant's car and was chasing somebody out in the backwoods of Snohomish County and drove it into a ditch because it was way more car than he was used to handling.
Isn't that amazing?
He had to explain that to his sergeant. His sergeant was not kind of powerfully unamused by the entire thing.
You know, you think about it when I mean, we all had different car stories growing up, and I just had a little four banger, but I got to drive my buddy's muscle cars occasionally, and they're easy to get squirrely, with those Chargers.
If you try to handle it the way you handled your Chevy too, it does different stuff.
It does.
You know, when you've got 400 horse.
Yeah. So I wanted to back up for a second and talk a little bit about, you've got a storage unit, you said, that's over in Ellensburg where you keep a lot of your cars. And how many do you have them restored, and how many do you have in line to be restored at this point?
Well, you're talking about the Police Museum's fleet maintenance facility,
yes,
which consists of four warehouses full of original vintage cars from the King County area, including State Patrol, King County Sheriff, Seattle PD. We store them there. We maintain them there. We strip them down, can paint them, do all the mechanical things to them. And it's an ongoing process. You know, we've got 30 cars, and that's a lot of cars. And even for our volunteer mechanics and like that, it keeps them busy throughout the year.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, for those who do not know and don't live in the area, Ellensburg is on the east side of the mountains. So it gets a tremendous amount less rain than we do here. The moisture level is far below what it is here in the Northwest.
Although the dust level is considerably higher.
But the winds are so strong, the dust doesn't stick around.
It does,
for
yeah.
Long.
Right. And that's where the barn find dust really comes in.
The dust is
handy.
In Tri-Cities now, is where it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that being the case, here on the west side, everybody, even when you restore your car, you're always trying to make sure that car doesn't get too wet because the rust, where over there, you've got warehouses that could be a pole building, and it's going to stay nice and dry for most of the year.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When we first started collecting these cars, we recognized quickly that the cars from the east side of the mountains were in so much better shape than those that were over here on the west side.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these cars on the east side could be sitting out for 40 years or more and not have a spot of rust on them.
I know.
Over here, you know, a car sits for 5 or 10 years.
It's a biology project.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, like mine.
And it costs a tremendous amount of money to restore these things when you're dealing with cancerous rust that's infected every square inch of these cars. And that's just the rust that you can see with your eye. There's a lot of stuff under there that you can't, that you discover after you've spent $10,000 in painting and restoring it.
And when you do restores, let me just ask real quick, do you do a frame off for these things, or do you just
Well, it
fix
depends
what
on the vehicle. With our 1949 original Washington State Patrol car, that was a complete frame off restoration.
Right.
Simply because it had been exposed to salt air for 20 or 30
no
years.
No choice.
And we had to. We had one shot at this car. It required an immense amount of restoration and body work well beyond our abilities. So it eventually got done, but it took 6 years to do versus some of the cars we get, which just need some body work, reupholstery work and paint, and they're ready to go. It's kind of the luck of the draw. You know, we've got we've tackled some of our biggest challenges that have already been restored. Right now we're working on an original 1977 Le Mans Enforcer from the Washington State Patrol, which the person we got it from put a plastic tarp over it on the west side of the mountains, which trapped all the moisture in and put big rust holes in the roof a lot of other places. So we were thrilled that the car existed, but we also recognize this is not going to be a quick restoration.
Now, what are probably the most, besides your original 40s car, what is probably the three most unique vehicles in your stable?
Well, I think the 70 Plymouth Satellite that the public is mostly used to seeing, the blue and white Seattle police car, is the most popular version. It's one of the rarest cars we have, and one of the funnest to drive. It's kind of got a unique shape. It's very 1970s. It's got the paisley interior. And
plastic basket weave seat covers?
Not quite. but it's also got a unique shape. It was getting away from the round-bodied versions that predated it.
Wasn't quite a square body yet.
A square body. Yeah. It was considered a mid-size car, which means it was only 22 feet instead of 3 feet long.
Right.
It was an amazing time for cars.
It was. Design. And, you know, the officers loved this era of car. I talked to a lot of the old Seattle officers that drove it. I was only 9 years old when this car was put into service.
Yep.
But there's plenty of stories with this thing that go along, both from officers who drove it and the criminals who saw it driving around at the time.
Who were privileged to ride in the back seat.
You know, the officers and criminals both admitted that they could hear these cars coming before they saw them coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which gave the crooks time to get away.
And that's with full mufflers. You could still...
That's with full mufflers.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the gas mileage of the 70 Satellite, it's about 8 miles to the gallon.
Yeah. Yes.
That's before you turn the engine on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so when you're driving around, you can go through a tank of gas.
You can kind of hear them whoop up, you know.
They didn't have air conditioning in them, so hot summer night, I'm taking the Satellite out for a torchlight this year.
Oh, nice.
And on a 90-degree day, it's about 115 inside that car.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of hard to stay focused when you're that hot, but thank God we have cars with air conditioning in them now.
Right. Well, and that's a unique one, and what's the most modern one you have?
Well, our most modern ones are our 2011 Crown Vic. State Patrol, we just acquired an original one from the State Patrol, fully equipped, about 6 months ago.
Oh, very good.
And it's not, we have these cars because we recognize they're the last of a generation. We have one from each agency, Seattle, King County, and the State Patrol. They're all obviously not restored because they're still in their original condition.
Oh,
with their original
you want to leave it that way.
Which is the best you can expect.
Yes, sure. Yeah.
However, it's easier to do that with modern cars than it is something that's 40
right.
years old.
Right.
So we have them in our collection. We take them out for service runs and to make comparisons for public events on what the equipment is now versus what it was 30 years ago. And the public finds it interesting.
One of my favorite exhibits at the Western Washington State Fair in Puyallup is always the law enforcement exhibit down there. It's usually on the western side of the fairgrounds. And they'll have an older, you know, police vehicle and then something new so you can kind of see the difference. It always fascinates me to see, like, especially the older ones. I want to say pre-75, there was nothing in them.
No, there really wasn't.
It was a cop car with a radio and a siren and a, you know,
yep.
cherry top, basically.
Yep. They're pretty
not
basic.
Much in the way. And the new ones are just like filled with stuff.
Well, the good thing about the older cars I remember is that I could slide across that bench seat, even being 6'5" and 200 pounds, without any obstructions. If
right.
I needed to get out in case of an accident or if I was being shot at,
right.
I knew where my escape route was. Nowadays, you don't have an escape route.
Yeah, you're in a cockpit.
You're stuck in that cockpit
yeah.
going out one door and one door only.
Wow.
And so that's one of the reasons I like the older cars better than I do the new. The comfort of the newer cars is clearly more evident.
Yeah.
And I when I drive the Satellite around for 8 hours, I recognize that, okay, yeah, the seats are comfortable for 1970, but not compared to 2019.
Yeah, they're pretty benchy.
Yeah.
Now,
the other thing, too, I'm okay. sure, I mean, as a law enforcement officer, you're wearing quite a bit of gear even back in the day, but now, I mean, with all of the stuff that you must be carrying 30 pounds worth of stuff, and it's bulky, so sliding across a seat is almost like probably not going to do that anyway. Getting in and out becomes a real thing. I see why the Chryslers, the Dodges, are a little bit more of a challenge because it's hard to get up out of something like that.
It is.
With all that gear on.
It is. It's hard. And, you know, it's hard on your body wearing that gear, first
yeah.
of all. And then when you're getting in and out of a car, it creates other problems for you as
sure.
well.
Well, that would be a whole topic in and of itself, the
yes,
whole
it is.
Tactical approach to the world of policing versus
yeah.
the old days of policing. But I wanted to ask you that when you go out, you do the torchlight. How many events do you typically do a year where you show up with one of your vehicles, do you think?
Well, it depends. You know, we primarily take the vehicles out for police-related events.
Okay.
We used to take the cars out with anybody who asked, but the problem now is the cars are so well-known, we get about 100 requests a year, and we can't possibly be at all these events.
Right.
I'm still a full-time working cop.
Sure.
Our volunteers still have their regular jobs to do. It's expensive taking these cars out, you know, especially if we're taking them from Ellensburg over here. You're looking at about $500 a vehicle.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which most, you know, small car shows can't afford.
Well, plus the sheer time.
It's the time factor.
Yeah.
So if we're going to
yep.
take these cars out to public events, they're going to have to be pretty good size events because really I have to look at, you know, what my time is worth and how many citizens will get to see this car. So, for example, taking it to the Greenwood Car Show, you know, you've got thousands and thousands of people that come
sure.
there to see all the cars, including ours. I'm spending the same amount of time there as I would at a car show with only 20 vehicles.
That's right.
So that's where I have to draw the line. I hate saying no to people, but I'm learning to say more no now than I did before. So
let me ask one final question. How often, or let me go this way. If somebody wants to see some of these cars, obviously they're not going to go to Ellensburg. Is there a local place where they can come and see, or is it strictly you guys go to bring the cars out?
Yeah, we don't pre-announce when the cars are going to be
Got
there.
It.
I can guarantee they are usually at the Ellensburg Rodeo Parade in the fall. They are at the Greenwood Car Show. Many of them are in the Pride Parade in late June.
Sure.
And other, you know, police funerals and other events periodically throughout the year. So
okay.
That may change as time goes on. When I retire, I'll have more time. When my volunteers
That's what
retire,
says.
They'll have more time. But for right now, we're pretty selective as far as where the cars go.
All right. Well, Jim Ritter, thanks so much for coming back for a second half. It's always great. We definitely would like to do this again. But in the meantime, if you want to know more about the Seattle Metro Police Museum, they can go to the website, which
they
is?
They go to the website at SeattleMetroPoliceMuseum.org, Get a hold of me at james.ritter@seattle.gov.
Perfect. Hey, you're listening to the greatest automotive info show in the known world. More coming up next on Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Welcome to Cars Confidential and another hot rod story from the old Car Nut book. And tonight, Brady, what is the story this week?
Well, this is one that every single person who ever listened to this show or ever will listen to this show can relate to. It is called My First Car.
Oh.
Simple and easy. It's by Carl King. It's in the first book. And it goes like this. My first car was a 1930 Chevrolet four-door sedan. I bought it from a man on my paper route, and like many of the first cars purchased by young guys, I found it in a backyard where this old boy left it out in the weather behind his house for quite some time. The 30 Chevys were wood-framed cars, and most roofs leaked at some point. This one had leaked for quite a while. And that and time had taken their toll. The doors were secured to the wood frame with screws, and they had long ceased to being anything close to secure. The doors were quite literally falling off, and for the most part, the entire vehicle lacked anything close to what might resemble integrity. I had to have it. So I paid about $15 for it since it was in such bad condition. I think the seller realized it wasn't worth even $15, but he couldn't talk me out of buying it, so he volunteered a couple of extra tires after the deal had been made. I called upon a friend to tow the car home since it didn't have any battery. And the year was 1948. I was 16 years old. The home was in Lake Forest Park, which is a rural part north of Seattle. I still live on the same property to this day, and back then it was still pretty rural. We had lots of property to spread out on, so I had an area where I worked on the car, but I didn't have much in the way of tools. In those days, when something needed to be repaired, we did it ourselves, and the limited selection of tools available. Once home, the car settled comfortably into its new spot. I got a battery hooked up, and I finally got the engine started. Well, it knocked pretty badly, so I decided to proceed with an overhaul, which meant new rings, regardless of the condition of the cylinders and pistons, adjusting the conrod's main bearings, regardless of the condition of the crankshaft, and lapping the valves by hand, no matter how bad they were. One of the rods had lost half or more of its babbitt, so a used rod at the junkyard replaced it for $1. Then I'd reassemble everything, lots of Permatex, fill the crankcase with re-refined oil at 15 cents a quart. I started it up and started driving it to high school just one day after it was knocking even worse than ever. So I tore the engine down again, and I discovered I installed one of the little dipper scoops on the rod cap backwards. So I had to purchase another junkyard rod for $1. The engine was improved, but it always knocked, and it always used oil, and that was the type of backyard rebuild that was common back
then. Well, besides
that,
the car was just falling apart.
Yeah. I was proud to be able to do it, however, lucky to have a running car. The body was another story. The wood framing was badly rotted, and unlike today, I didn't have the skill or tools to rebuild a wood-framed body. The rear portion was particularly bad, and the rear doors were about to fall off. In my infinite wisdom, I decided the best thing to do was convert this sedan to a pickup. I removed all the body behind the front seat, manufactured a truck bed out of 2x4 and 4x4 lumber.
An original rat rod.
Oh, yeah. Sheathed it over with 1-inch boards. Of course, this was all used lumber that I had on hand. The wooden truck bed extended back over the gas tank and covered the gas filler cap, making it impossible to fill the tank.
Kind of like a hay wagon.
I solved this problem by leaving one board unnailed so I could slip it out when it came time to
Yes.
Picture this. So now I had a pickup. However, the portion of the original body that remained, which was now the truck cab, was so rotten and loose that if I jerked the clutch upon starting up, the cab lurched backwards, causing the radiator brace rod to pull the radiator into the fan. I'm getting the Three Stooges theme song here in my head. This made a hell of a noise, kind of a clang-clang, so I would then slam on the brakes, causing the cab to lurch forward, with the windshield and the cowl moving away from me, and pushing the radiator away from the fan.
Oh, that solves
everything. Then I would release the clutch slowly and proceed on my way. It was always kind of a tentative start, followed by an even more tentative stop.
Parents didn't care what their kids did back in those days, did they?
Yeah, well, the old Hudson in the movie Grapes of Wrath was actually a better car than my pickup. So we moved to the property in Lake Forest Park in 1944, and our family raised chickens so we'd have eggs and chickens to eat. My chore was to clean the chicken house every Saturday. If you've ever had the pleasure of doing this, you have missed nothing. But I started a little business whereby I would load the pickup with chicken house cleanings, and I would sell it to other people in the area for fertilizer. It took me all day to load the truck, drive to the customer, unload. It was really, really hard work, and I'm glad I didn't have to make a life's work of it. One Saturday, I had an order for a large load, so after loading up the truck, I proceeded up the street when I noticed the gas gauge was on empty. The 30 Chevy was equipped with an electric gas gauge, which worked.
Wow.
Many even more expensive cars of this era used a less reliable hydrostatic fuel gauge. Anyway, I realized I was about out of gas. In less than a minute, the engine starved out. Fortunately, I was on a gradual downgrade and able to coast far enough to roll into a gas station where I simply stopped at the pumps. I had a minor problem, however. How could I fuel up? You'll recall, the little removable board was now under a big pile of chicken poop. There was only one thing to do, and I did just that. I started shoveling the load of manure and straw out onto the concrete apron in the middle of the gas station. I needed to get at the tank so I could fuel up. This gas station was pretty close to my house, and the guy that owned the gas station knew me as the annoying kid who was always asking for gas on the cuff, patching tires, trying to borrow tools, making messes, and using all of his shop rags. He actually liked me, but I took advantage of his graciousness at every opportunity. Times were tough for him, and making a profit in business was hard. I was oblivious. He came running out of the office and shouted, "Get that pile of stuff out of here." I would, but I can't move. I'm out of gas, I said. So he just stood there looking disgusted as I shoveled down to the tank, throwing chicken poop on his lot. I removed the board, pumped in 3 gallons at 25 cents a gallon, and then shoveled as much of it as I could with my inadequate shovel back into the truck. Then I was on my way. He was never very happy with the fertilizer I left or the weeds it helped grow through the cracks in his asphalt. The next year, I obtained a LaSalle, which was a much better vehicle. I promptly quit the chicken poop business. These days, my stable of cars includes a 32 Auburn, a 30 Packard Big 8 Roadster, a 21 Ford Model T, all very nice cars and quite a step up from my first car. I just, you know, everybody's got stories as a kid. I have a picture of this guy shoveling manure out on this poor schmo's gas station. You know, when I was a kid, there was a gas station just down the street from our house. It was a Standard station. And, it was a Richfield. Oh, it was a Richfield station. Remember those guys? And the guy who was the gas station guy, the mechanic down there, was really, really nice to us kids. We would come down and we'd just want to hang around and watch him work. And he was really, really a nice guy. And occasionally somebody would come in and want some oil. And this was back in, you know, service days when he would pour the oil and everything. And he would let us punch the funnel, the little spout, into the oil can.
Yep, so the little cardboard can with the the metal ends.
Yeah, and he would, and it had the punch in spout.
Yep.
He would let us punch the spout in, and that's how I learned how to do that. Was that guy let me do it? I was probably about 8.
You know, speaking of first-time cars, we got quite a slew of after-show entries on our Facebook page.
Oh, we did.
I was amazed at how many people were.
Oh, yeah. There's probably another 10 or 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have collected them. I'm going to actually put them on the Facebook page.
Very good.
There's some still there, but I'm going to put them all in one post and set them up there. And thank you for everybody who did that. It's really cool to see what people's first cars
and
were.
And if you've got
or
some,
their favorite cars.
Please just go to Horsepower Chrome and Rust Facebook page.
Yep.
And you know what? If you got a picture.
Oh, yeah. Post the picture.
Post the picture, too.
Sure, it's all good.
Oh, we'd love to see that.
Yeah, great stuff.
I mean, that's part of the whole idea of the show is not only are we covering the new stuff, interesting people, but the old stories too, because yep.
Everybody's got an old story. Everybody's got a favorite car.
Yeah,
absolutely. And as a matter of fact, that's why David Dickinson started writing the Old Car Nut books, because people have their favorite stories. And as we always say, you can get them at oldcarnutbook.com. You can find them on Amazon. And I'm still bugging David to make the fourth edition. Sooner or later, we're going to do that.
Well, and speaking of old cars, I came across this really cool article is that for a new show.
Oh.
And usually we do this at the end of the show, but new show you may want to watch featuring 36 Corvettes by a group calling itself Corvette Heroes. 36 Corvettes, 1953 through 82 and 84 through 89, have been restored or prepared by Dream Car Restorations in Hicksville, Long Island.
Nice.
And will be up for grabs in a recently launched national sweepstakes.
So all 36 of these Corvettes?
Yes. Work carried out on the select cars, specifically the 53, 56, 57, 66, 67, and 69, will be detailed in a History Channel series entitled The Lost Corvettes, slated to begin airing in mid-September.
Nice. And this is going to be on History Channel?
Yes.
Nice. Well, we'll have to watch that.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be great.
Set that one up on your DVR as we speak, folks.
And right there is our music. And
super.
I just want to let everybody know, thanks for listening, and we've got one more segment coming up, the trivia question. I think we've got two trivia questions coming up for you and a whole lot more. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. In an 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino man.
Hey, welcome back. It's Around the Wheel, sponsored by, well, it could be you if you want to get with us and be a sponsor of the show. This is where we talk about upcoming events and things that are happening, and, of course, the trivia question of the week. One of the big events that is coming up this week is the Seattle Torchlight Parade, which is one of the big events of Seafair, our sea festival every year. The Torchlight Parade will feature some of the cars that are going to be in the inaugural Seattle Seafair Classic Car Show, which is August 3rd at the Hydroplane Pits, and that is going to be a huge event. But yeah, the Torchlight Parade is going to be on Saturday, and it's going to be just an excellent event, a super show. Let's see. So last week, boys and girls, we had a trivia question which consisted of which car was considered to be the very first car designated officially as a muscle car. There were a lot of cars that were a big deal. This was the first official muscle car, and we actually got a winner. Chuck Arve got to me on Facebook and said, "I know what this is because I had one."
Ooh!
I hate Chuck already. But the very first car that was designated as a muscle car was the 64 Pontiac GTO.
I thought that's what it was.
Yep, that's the one.
Yes.
Chuck apparently had one. I asked him off. I messaged him separately. I said, "Do you still send me a picture? Do you still have?" No.
No.
He had it, you know, and he sold it.
Of course.
You're going to hate this. He had it, he owned it, and he sold it for $600.
Yes.
I was like, come on, you're killing me here.
But, you know, you got to think he probably sold it back in the day when no one thought about
how... It was 68.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, $600 was good for a car then. You know?
And no one thought about muscle cars in the long run.
Well, they also didn't think about them going away.
No.
That was before the gas crisis.
That would make a whole nother show.
Yeah.
Why we do what we do to think today, and we're not thinking that it won't ever be like this.
No, it's all going to be fine.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yep. Well, so, all right. So that was a good one, and congratulations to Chuck. Chuck wins the coveted bucket of Horsepower Chrome and Rust Barn Find Dust, which, as you know, if you sprinkle on any car, it quadruples the value because somebody will think you found it in a barn or not. Anyway, this week's trivia question is a good one. Now, you had a trivia question earlier, right?
I did.
Oh, and are we going to officially do two?
Well, you do yours first.
Okay.
If we got time, we will.
All right. So the official question is this. How did, now not after what, but how did the Ford Mustang, one of the most iconic sport cars, you know, sporty cars in the panoply of automobile, how did the Mustang get its name? What was the derivation? Where did the Mustang come from? If you know, you can get with us at contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You can also go to our Facebook page and answer there. It's just fine. You can do it by Messenger, or you can just post it on the page. We don't care. First one wins. Again, you get your coveted chrome-plated, brass-polished bucket of Horsepower Chrome and Rust Barn Find Dust, which is sitting mere 4 feet from me as we speak.
Well,
you have another trivia question?
Well, I don't know if I want to have it a trivia question or
just a fun question?
Just a fun question, but this is for you.
Oh, for me? Oh,
yes.
We're testing the master.
This is going to mark the 50th anniversary of a specific car that came out in 1970. One that's near and dear to your heart. What would that car have been put out by Chevy?
1970?
Yes.
Was this the first year of production?
Yes.
Oh, 1970.
Think luxury coupe.
Well, yeah, I mean the Impala, but that wasn't the first year of the Impala.
Uh-uh.
Luxury coupe. So Chevelle.
Tudor.
Chevelle. Caprice. No, that was before that.
First.
70.
70.
Luxury coupe.
Come on now. You owned one.
I owned one?
Not a 70, but you owned one of these things.
I did?
Or your...
Oh, it was the Chevy Monte Carlo.
Yes.
I had a 70. I did.
Yes.
And then we also had a 74. It was my mother's
car. The 70 came out with a...
It had a 350.
454 if you wanted to get that one.
Yeah, ours was a 350, but it was great. Silver, black interior.
50th anniversary this year.
Dinner. That's nice. Hey, that's our cue to hit the gas till next week. Doggone it, wish we had more time. Thanks for the great stories. Thanks to Jim Ritter for coming by on a second time and talking about the Seattle Metro Police Museum. And thank you for liking and following our page. As we always say, for Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright. Keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we light the tires on another Horsepower Chrome and Rust.